Mr. Lister, Reel 17. We're talking about the period you spent in Vienna. Now, were you involved or were you aware of the Vienna black market? You know, that was sort of quite famous later on. Were you aware of it?
Well, you had to be aware of it because strips is a word in England, I suppose. You've got all these strips diving around trying to get watches off you or equipment, binoculars or anything that was available. And blankets were always in great demand, and particularly American blankets, because they used to be ideal for making coats that were better finer quality than ours, and made beautiful overcoats or even jackets, you know, and things like that. It's amazing what they could make with them.
So you weren't much involved. Now, after a while, they were there about a month, were you? They went back to Wilden again.
Yeah.
It's getting on towards winter. I mean, what do you remember of the winter?
Well, I parted with the with the big truck by then, and I was back largely on motorcycle maintenance. Then lots of training schemes going on, and they decided to form a ski section. And there was a company skate there. I decided to go in for this scheme, and I got some civilian skis. One of these people at the brewery got me some, and we went to a squash, I can't remember the name, up in the hills. And we went on, we had an instructor, and we went on a proper ski run. And we went on the nursery slopes, and one or two of us were getting on our way, and actually got through together. And we were told not to go on the main run, especially if they'd been raining. And one Saturday afternoon, had a few schnapps, and we decided to go. About half a dozen of us got our skis and went on this run. And I went down this main run, and I couldn't make a right-hand turn at the bottom and shot over the embankment and about 30 feet down into the top of some pine trees. And I broke all the fingers in my right hand, my right forearm, and dislocated my right shoulder. And I was covered with scratches and God knows what. And they put me in hospital in the 42nd General at Graz. And there I was, and I missed my demob from there. I should have been demobbed while I was in there.
Because the battalion was broken up in January, February 46, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right, yes.
So how long were you in the hospital at Graz, roughly?
14 days, I think.
Because when you came back, there was a bit of trouble about the rifle.
Yeah, well,
can you tell us that story on the tape?
When I went in, just left all my things where they were in this slot. And when I came out, the report back to Wilden, I dropped off at the, got a lift on a truck, dropped off at the old brewery in they said, oh, your gear will be able to the quartermaster's in the building itself. So I walked across the bridge from the brewery to go into the building, and on my way across the bridge I bumped into a sergeant. And he,
which one?
The sergeant Thornton, and he pointed his finger and he says, "Where's your rifle?" I said, "Well, it'd be with the rest of me gear." And he says, "Well, where is it then?" I says, "Well, I don't know. I'm going to see about it now." He says, "You'll be on the charge." He says, "Your rifle's missing." I says, "It can't be. It was there in the billet when I left there." He says, "Not there now." And I said, "Well, I don't know that, like, because by then nobody cared whether it was on the charge or not, really, being on the plate and going on." He said, "Well, consider yourself on the charge." So I went up to the quartermasters and saw the quartermaster's storm, and he says, "Well," he says, "your kit's all right." I said, "Well, what about my rifle?" I said, "Sergeant Tom just put me on the charge for losing my rifle." I wish I'd known about that. He says, "Do you know what its number was?" Well, I'd had it a long time, and I had a note of the number. And I had a stack of rifles lying upon rocks and piles and whatnot. And the captain quartermaster came in at the time. And he says, "You're back, are you?" I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "What are you doing?" I says, "I've just been put on a charge for those miracles." He says, "Well, I have done that." And I saw him, and he says, "Oh, forget about it." He says, "Where did you leave it?" So I told him, with the rest of my kit. He says, "Well, it's bound to be there." I said, "Well, I want to prove it." I says, "I've got the number." "Oh," he says, "you've got the number." He said, "Well, get one then." I said, "Go through them with him." He said, "And as it happened, I found it within minutes, and there it was." So he says, "All right, and I'll see about it. Forget about it." And so I forgot about it, and I never heard any more about it. It just showed the attitude of some people being all right all the time you were in action and whatnot, and then suddenly start feeling the feet.
How long was it before you were demobbed then? After you got back?
Just another 4 or 5 days. I don't know, it's 4 days or 5 days.
What was the demob procedure for you? What happened? You'd be sent, you had to get home first, of course.
No, but it was when we went, we got all our instructions and rations to take on the train and things like that, and reported to the RTO at Graz and train and moved off to how many times we changed trains. We finally got into France, and then we stayed on the same train from then up to Chalentois.
Doesn't matter.
I think it was Le Havre, and across to Dover. I trained from there to walking. And handed all the military paraphernalia in and got our civvies and leaf passes and whatnot, all the ration books and all the things you had to have to be a civvy again. And chain passes via London. In my case, back to dinner. I think it was about, there was quite a few going to Newcastle and anyway, one or two in the northeast area, so it was quite a few of us. We went up to London and we had some time to wait for the train from King's Cross and went and had a drink or two and then.
How did you get back into employment?
Well, if you were in employment before the war, your former employer was obliged to take you back. However, you had a leave period, and you had you fair amount, depending on your service, and you had a fair amount of gratuities. So I wasn't in any way to start, but I got in contact with the wholesale fish vendors that I was working for, and they closed the depots that I used to work at down, because before the war it was competitive. At that time, after the war, there was no competition at all. Everything was controlled and fixed. So they couldn't actually offer me a job as it had been. But they invited me to go down when to Hull when my leave period expired, or before if I wanted to. And they would pay me expenses, etc. And have a talk about future employment. And so I let drag out to the verge of the last moment, and I was spending me gratuity at the £3 a day, which you were allowed to draw. And I thought it's time I was doing something about it. So I went down and saw managing director, who I'd always got on my own. You know, he said, we can't have you working in the North East. He said, you know, I explained the reason why. He says, how about Chesterfield? We need somebody in that area. I said, there's no way I'm going back to Chesterfield. I've been away for 4.5 years. I want to be back in Durham area, you know. So I thought, oh, yeah, jump into that. However, he said, well, think it over. I've been back after this interview about 10 days. I thought I didn't. I got a letter saying that I was contact this chap at Dalton's. The name of the firm was changing, and amalgamating with somebody else, and might be able to offer me something. And they changed the name to Ross Brothers, which is a famous name now, of course, but in those days it was virtually unheard of. And so he sat down in the area as a salesman, but as I've said, there was no competition. You couldn't drop a penny or raise a penny or tuppence or sevenpence the way we used to before the war. And all these other firms were established. So it was very difficult to make new ground. And I did try fairly hard for about a month, but I wasn't making anything at all. And chap at all wasn't happy about the situation. He still said he thought he could do better in the Midlands, and I still thought I didn't want to go to the Midlands, so we agreed to disagree and part of the company, and I got a job driving the van for a butcher, a local butcher. I mean a real butcher, not a meat purveyor. And that was quite something, because the old man, I was driving this old butcher around on rounds, and the old man that was driving couldn't drive. He hadn't got a driving license, and he never had been able to drive. He was tremendously popular old man, and should have made down the ground, because all his best customers were public houses or clubs, and they worked with him long before I realised that these rounds we were doing could have been within about 2.5 hours, and it would take him 7 or 8 hours. I said, anyway, you stopped an hour here and an hour and a half there. And he was a real character. I was with him quite a long time. And then I saw a job advertised. For a salesman. I was getting a bit fed up driving job advertised as a salesman in a radio and cycles. One of these Never Never films, and I put in for that and got it, and I was with them for quite a long time and got on very well.
So that was, you eventually got back into steady employment after the war. Had the war affected you in any way, do you think? Positively or negative?
It did, it changed my outlook.
In what way?
I was doing well enough in this fish thing, but I'd always thought of furthering my education and I knew it was unlikely I'd ever get to the university, but I would thought about taking some kind of course to get some reasonable qualifications, but I lost the ambition to do that. I was quite happy just
after the war.
Yeah, I was quite happy just to make a living, reasonable living, and whittle along.
Thank you very much.